Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Elland Road podcast, episode 42 with me, Phil Hay, the YAP's chief football writer, and Joe Urquhart, Leeds United digital writer for the newspaper, and more importantly these days, our website as well. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Yeah, we better not mention the website too much.
No. Apologies for those of you who are having
multiple issues with it. Also, it's not my responsibility.
No, it's absolutely not. In the same way as I always say, I don't write the headlines and I don't write the captions, but all other mistakes are most certainly mine. So aim your complaints this way. Well, we're back after a fourth straight win at home to QPR on Saturday. Great run of form at the moment. Second in the table, significantly, I think, 1 point behind Norwich, but 5 points ahead of Derby County in third place. And a definite feel at this stage that the Championship is slowly starting to take shape after a very, very even start. We'll have a good look at that. We'll have a chat about latest transfer news and latest non-transfer news, given that Marcelo Bielsa seems to be preparing for a quiet January, which will be nice for my Twitter account and phone in general. And a look ahead to Bolton Wanderers this weekend and perhaps a little chat about Villa to come on the Christmas weekend, which is, I think, by far the biggest game of this month. To start with QPR, another game, and they haven't done this very often, where Leeds have conceded first but gone on to win the match. And very, very similar, I felt, to the win over Reading, the win over Bristol City. Getting the job done against lower league opposition, getting the job done on days where didn't necessarily play as well as they can, but certainly in the end looked like the better side, the side who deserved to take the points. And very much on a roll at the moment.
Yeah, four wins in a row. Those pesky foreign coaches coming over here and winning four games in a row. How
stealing
dare they?
Stealing our points, yes.
Not giving English managers a chance to win four games in a row.
More on that later on, yeah.
What a load of rubbish. Anyway, yeah, good performance. I think we sort of said at the time, didn't we, that it was a good opening 20 minutes. Roof could have had a couple of goals, if not three. And then once QPR scored on that break, it kind of went a bit flat, didn't it, until they grabbed the goal before half-time. Little bit of genius from Pablo Hernandez, and Roof sort of ghosted into the back post. And yeah, the penalty, 59 games, was it?
59 games, yeah.
Incredible scenes. I think the whole stadium just erupted like, what?
I don't think anybody could believe it. I was saying in my match report afterwards, I've never seen a run-of-the-mill goal celebrated with so much enthusiasm or remembered in quite the same way as that one. But yeah, I was doing the maths. It was something like 418 days, 5,000 odd minutes, 58 matches in between the penalty against Reading last season and the penalty that Roof tucked away. Good penalty in the end. Him and Hernandez had a little to do over.
Yeah, I was going to say they were having a scrap, weren't they?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Not scrap. Scrap's probably
You get the feeling that they've long since stopped discussing who takes penalties at Thorpe Arch, so nobody was clear. I thought Hernandez would, even though he'd missed the last one, but Roof is kind of in that mindset and that zone at the moment, isn't he, where he feels like he's scoring goals.
No, was that 10 this season?
10 for the season, yeah. Into double figures.
Which
is very good. Very good for anybody. 9 players in the Championship who are up over double figures. Lewis Graben, leading scorer at the moment on 14, but you know, not many who are scoring at a faster rate than Roof in terms of minutes on the pitch. And I was going through his stats earlier this week because to the naked eye, it does look as if he's improved. It looks as if he's playing in a different way and is more dangerous, more settled, I think happier in this system. And going back to something we've spoken about previously, that the style of the team that plays into his feet rather than relying on him to be a centre-forward in the mould of a Chris Wood, for example, is definitely working for him. But most shots per game of anybody in the Championship, Roof. And at the moment, there were misses on Saturday, but at the moment, he's got a real knack of getting on the end of chances. He had about 8 against Reading. He had about 8 against QPR on Saturday. His anticipation is very good. Leeds also seem to be reading where he is and where he's going. And having had two pretty mixed years at Elland Road where nobody was particularly convinced that he was going to be a top-level Championship player, he is starting to look like the business.
Yeah, and obviously he's getting in those positions, and like you say, he could have had two or three in the first 20 minutes alone, but the fact that he's getting in there and having those chances speaks volumes for his confidence. And I think he spoke about it earlier this year, and maybe you mentioned it in the piece, but you did today, but like even Patrick Bamford was just saying, you need to be more selfish, and I think we're seeing that from him. And obviously the stat there, he just reeled off sort of points to that. He's being more selfish, and it's turning into goals, isn't it? And like I say, he's on fire, as everyone likes to say. But interesting to see what happens with his contract, I guess, as well, next couple of months.
Yeah, no movement with that at the moment. A couple of podcasts ago, we had a fairly lengthy discussion about it. It sounded in October like Leeds were getting ready to to open negotiations with him, and it hasn't happened as yet. And last time I spoke to anybody at the club, they were saying that they expected it to be more January, February time when they tied that up. They are very conscious of the fact that he's got 18 months left, and that in 6 months' time, give or take, he'll be in a similar position to the position Chris Wood was in August 2017 when Leeds ended up selling him to Burnley. 12 months left on his deal, tried to offer him a new contract at the end, but ultimately weren't going to be able to match anything like the salary that he was being offered over at Turf Moor. And I mean, the interesting thing with Roof is that if you go back to the start of the season, I don't think there would have been much clamour for Leeds to have rushed into offering him a new deal and tying him down. But he does look like a different player, and you were saying there, looks like he's or is potentially being more selfish. I wonder if the bigger thing is that they've actually found him a position, yeah. Finally found him a niche in the team. So much experimentation with him as a winger, left winger, right winger, very occasionally as a number 10, from time to time in a front two, which always kind of seemed to suit him best under previous head coaches. But finally, Bielsa's found him a role that works to his strengths and is bringing some consistent and good performances out of him. And I think now that we're getting close to Christmas and we're almost at the halfway point of the season, I don't think there's any doubt that he does deserve a new contract, and I don't think there's any doubt that he is somebody that Leeds should be investing in to keep for further down the line. There's plenty of potential there. But they are going to have to give him a hefty pay rise. He signed when Chiellino was in charge, at a time when they were cutting back at the wage bill. Salaries weren't especially high, and certainly he'll be on nothing like the money that Patrick Bamford's earning after coming from Middlesbrough in the summer. So I don't think necessarily a straightforward one. I think they're going to have to do right by him if they get it done. Obviously, if they go up to the Premier League, the money changes completely and it becomes easier. But I think in Championship terms, they'll probably have to push the boat out to keep him happy.
Well, I think him and his agent will just be looking at where he ranks in terms of the Championship, looking at the names he's alongside in terms of goals scored this season, and go, well, they're worth this much, why am I not worth this much? So I'm sure, like you say, Leeds have got a bit of negotiating to do, but it seems like he's settled here, his family's settled here, he's had another kid, hasn't he, and he's enjoying life. And so hopefully there's not any clamour from that side of you, but like you say, the problem is if the Premier League money comes calling, a lot of heads get turned.
Well, it's that funny situation, isn't it? On the one hand, because he is suddenly playing so well, and because he seems to have found his role under Bielsa, you would think of it as a very strange time to go. But then on the other hand, suddenly you're maximising your value, mm-hmm. and your value is increasing incrementally as you play well. And I would have thought that there would be an ample number of clubs out there who would like to take a chance on him, and would think that he'd be worth a go at the reduced transfer fee that you always have to pay once you start getting down to the last 12 months. So I'd be very, very surprised if Leeds allow a situation where that happens. But I mean, it is going to depend on money, and you're right, he'll want parity with a lot of players in the Championship, but I think first and foremost he's going to want parity with players at Elland Road, and that is probably Bamford in particular. I think, you know, striker like him, goal scorer like him, but it's been Roof who's been serving up the goals this season, and in part because Bamford's been injured, yeah. But also in part because Bamford wasn't able to get in the team.
Well, they kept it out, didn't he, in August, that's the thing. That's why he ended up playing in the 23s and ultimately got injured, isn't it? Well, like you say, it'll be interesting to see if anyone generally comes in January, even with just sort of like a tentative sniff around, to see, just because they'll clearly know about the contract issue, whether they reckon they could get that one done. But yeah, again, I'm not saying that's going to happen, by the way, before anyone starts quoting.
No, you never know. I don't see.
Just interesting, won't it, to see if anyone comes in for anyone. I don't see anyone leaving at this stage.
No, there was talk of Phillips to West Brom earlier this week, but you would think never in a million years at this stage. I think as much as anything, because regardless of whether you want to take the money, you'd have a very difficult job selling that one to Bielsa.
Yeah.
I mean,
imagine that conversation.
Well, imagine the flight back to Argentina the following day. Yeah, I don't think so. But we will come on to talk about transfers, because it does look like we're heading for a fairly quiet window, mm. which is by no means an unusual occurrence around these parts. Leeds in January don't tend to be high drama, but then again, they've never been in quite this position in the league, but the possible exception of when Grayson had them second, particularly that win over Queen's Park Rangers in 2010 when it was looking good and failed to invest. But there's some slight differences this time round. Just to go back to the QPR game, one of the big pluses, I think, was Jamie Shackleton at right back. He's looked good in flashes there previously. He hasn't played a huge amount this season, but has obviously been on the fringes and more of a late substitute for Bielsa than anything. But his direct running was really impressive on Saturday is overlapping. The way he attacked the byline showed that he's got a good attacking brain, I think, and knows what he needs to be doing in those areas. And if I'm being totally honest, looked to me like a better option in that role than Stuart Dallas.
Well, he certainly gives you more going forward, doesn't he? And I think he scares the opposition more with his pace. And he seemed to get sort of into the opposition box a lot more than Dallas. And it's not that it's a slight on Dallas. It's just, I think, the fact that it's a different position for him to play. But Shackleton's obviously adapted his skills and is a bit younger, so he's been a bit more nurtured, I'd imagine, by Bielsa and his coaching staff. But yeah, didn't look out of place, did he, at all? And fair dues to him as well, because he kept Luke Freeman really quiet in the first half, who's one of QPR's better players on that left-hand side. And wasn't scared to get him involved in a bit of scrapping afters. And it's what you like to see from 8-year-old kid. No fear attitude playing at Elland Road. I think, was it full first championship start at Elland Road? I think it was.
He obviously started down at Swansea.
It's a lot on his shoulders, that, isn't it? And well done to him.
He's one of those players who was spoken about 3 or 4 years ago, particularly when Neil Redfern was still here as academy coach. They obviously took a lot of pleasure out of the fact that Sam Byron was coming through and Alex Mowat, Lewis Cook, Charlie Taylor. But they always used to talk at that stage about the 15s and the 16s, and Redfern would always say that was the group that people at Thorpe Arch were most excited about, because they thought that was where the biggest depth of talent lay, and Shackleton was one of those. He was always somebody that was spoken about whenever you had these conversations. And it is a little crop that's coming through at the moment, isn't it? As opposed to just the one or two exceptional players here or there, that it does start to feel like the 23s are serving up an awful lot that are good enough and coached enough to play for the first team. And Shackleton physically looks in superb shape. And he went through 90 minutes pretty easily, I felt, at the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, in the way that there's been questions asked about the physique of Jack Clarke and whether or not he's got the kind of core match fitness at the age of 18 to last 90 minutes, admittedly in a slightly different position, although Shackleton is playing box to box and, you know, byline to byline. No question at all, I don't think, about his physique, and he actually looks like somebody who could cope with a run of games now.
Yeah, and it's just, it's testament to him and maybe Bielsa's belief in him as well, that he's sort of brought him in August, so it probably doesn't feel like too much of a leap for him, because he's been in and around the squad for the last 4 or 5 months, so it's not too big a sort of change in a quick period. I think he's been transitioned into the team. Obviously, he was involved in pre-season, so I think he's maybe not natural, but I think he's got the respect of all the senior players and et cetera, et cetera. So I think he's, you know, I think over this Christmas period, if he can play like that, Leeds won't be missing much on that right-hand side. If not, they'll be getting more, which is, like I say, not a slight on Dallas, but he just looks like he offers a bit more going forward. But, you know, we'll have to see until he gets properly tested, going back towards his goal, sort of maybe over the Christmas period. Obviously, QPR didn't really offer that much on Saturday. So we'll see how he copes with that. But, yeah, he's slotted straight in there. And again, another one who's just slotted into a position that he's not particularly familiar with, and off he went. Fair enough.
It doesn't really open the door for Louis Coyle, does it?
No.
People have been asking about him in the past few weeks, given that now that Dallas has fractured his foot, missing Ailey, missing Berardi, there is a pretty wide gap there at right back, but Shackleton looks capable of filling that. Coyle is obviously over at Fleetwood Town. He's played in every league game this season, has done very well for them. They like to keep him, and I suspect probably will keep him in January. But he's 23 now, Coyle, and was always very highly touted when he was in the 21s, as it was back when he was his captain. Somebody who you always felt over time was going to break through at Leeds, but you start to wonder, really, don't you? It does start to look like he's going to have to take his career elsewhere permanently in order to play a great deal. And I wouldn't have thought that Bielsa, having decided that Coyle could go on loan in the summer, is going to have changed his mind to any great extent, particularly on the basis that, I mean, we've seen Ailing at Thorpe Arch is no leg brace on anymore. He was having a joke with us before the QPR game that he might actually have to stick a leg brace on and play, just to make sure that there was a right back. But I think he was saying he's got a little way to go yet. Berardi, I know, has got much further. You're talking well into February before he's back from this hamstring problem. But it doesn't look like there's going to be an opening for Louis Coyle, really, does it? Particularly if Shackleton is playing like that and starts nailing down that position for a while.
No, and again, it comes back to the Bielsa mould of wanting to have someone who's ready and knows how the system works. And I'm not saying he wouldn't, but he's not been around the team for the last 6 months, so he's not going to be as prepped as someone like Jamie Shackleton. It sounds like as well that Jerry Barton's particularly keen to extend that loan deal. From talking to a few people over at Fleetwood last week, that they've obviously been so impressed with what he's done there. Obviously featured against Guiseley on Monday, and then I think he actually missed the game on Luton on Saturday through injury. Doing the loan watch this week, obviously you've done your research. You end up on some weird parts of the internet trying to find some Spanish weird divisions game. Anyway, let's not go into that. But
it's a family show,
is it? We swear quite a lot.
It hasn't been since David Prutton came on.
Explicit content, please be aware. But no, it sounds like he's settled really well over there, and it sounds like himself, he's kind of got to that stage where he understands he needs to go out and play first team football. So I think we mentioned it a couple of podcasts ago that if he was to come back, it would probably only be for 6 months anyway, because he'll probably be going out again in summer, if not leaving the club permanently. So
he knows that he's not young anymore. He's young compared to me, and he's young in terms of appearances, not far into his career in that sense, but he knows that 23 is no age to be messing around in development squads or to be scrabbling around for the odd appearance here and there. He's a lovely lad, actually, is Louis. He's very switched on, and I don't think in any way bitter about what's going on here. I think he's just quite pragmatic about the fact that he wants to play, and they're a good progressive club, Fleetwood. They, you know, moved forward a million miles from where they were not so long ago, but decent club to be at. I think he'll make a very good right back for somebody, but I just don't get the feeling that he's going to make a right back for Leeds as things stand.
No, he's in a similar position to like Tyler Denton, isn't he, where he just needs to go out and get games at this point. So
we asked Bielsa afterwards about Samuel Saiz, and one of the traits of Bielsa, certainly in the job here, has been his reluctance to be critical of players directly, even in circumstances where you thought he'd have been justified in doing so. He tends to blame himself. He's blamed himself for every defeat so far, particularly the game after West Brom, when I think many of us thought that the fingers should really have been pointed at the players rather than him or his tactics. And to add to that, he very rarely says anything, or perhaps never says anything, without giving it calculated thought first. You never feel like he's talking off the cuff or saying things that he regrets, and everything that he does say, he seems to have given, you know, to have pondered before he comes out with. So for him to say that Saiz is short of confidence, isn't giving him enough, needs to be making the difference more, needs to be doing things that he isn't doing, it felt like a bit of a reminder for Saiz. It felt like almost a little bit of a, not a clip round the ear, but a tap on the head, as if to say, you need to be playing better, you need to be doing more for me. He wasn't critical of his performance on Saturday. He said that actually he'd played quite well. But I think the thing, and the stats do bear this out, I think the thing that Bielsa isn't seeing from him is the breaks from deep, the ability to beat a man, to go past the player, which Saiz, when he's playing well, does so well, and in doing that opens up so much space in front of him. Quite interesting comments, I thought. It's probably the first time, maybe the exception of Billy Peacock Farrell, that he's actually been quite openly critical about somebody.
Yeah, I think what you just said there is probably bang on. He's maybe a gentle reminder that he's still got to work hard. He's not, you know, he's at a club where you can't just stand still, and maybe he was the best player last year, but he's got to become sort of that team player this year. And like I say, if he's not seeing enough from him, then it's a bit of a weird one, because we discussed the Bailey Peacock Farrell situation at length, didn't we? Because it's obviously a very different position, where he's obviously got, what was it, four other options that he can probably pick from. So it's maybe a bit more of a, you need to start getting yourself ahead of that pack, whereas the Bailey Peacock Farrell one was literally, you're the last person left. Well, I'm still going to say it anyway.
I think as well with Peacock Farrell, it couldn't have been painted as resting somebody. I know I know Blackman had been injured, so he didn't actually need to tell us that he was going to drop Peacock Farrell, but it didn't feel like the same comment in the same sort of way. It was almost as if to say, look, he was going to be on the bench, and it would have been perfectly obvious on that basis that, you know, I was concerned with his performances. Whereas with Saiz, he obviously started at the weekend. I actually thought some of his passing passing was very good and pretty insightful.
It's that final third, isn't it, where he comes alive? But I think it's maybe a bit more that Bielsa wants from him rather than just popping up with the odd pass every 20 minutes.
Well, if
I think that's where it came from. It's quite a reactive, wasn't it? Sorry.
I
got shouted out for that on Twitter.
If we're, I only shout at you when you yawn here. I haven't done that for a few weeks.
I get me 8 hours.
Got a new bed, new mattress.
I wish I had a new bed. Mattress is horrendous.
One of those magic foam, memory foam, whatever it's called. I think if we're understanding the translation correct, and this is always a point at which you can get lost slightly, but he did seem to be saying, Bielsa, that his problem with Sai at the moment is that he's not going past people, that he's not taking the ball, taking people on, and getting himself into space in a way that takes players out. So I was having a look back through, you know, the analysis of his performances, and if you go back to the first month of the season, which I think, give or take, would probably rank as the best month he's had at the club. He played well in periods of last season, particularly early on, but there were points in August, particularly away at Derby, where he was, to use a slightly sort of awful phrase, unplayable. In that position of breaking from deep, they were pretty much able to rely on him, Leeds, to go by three players a game. So three effective dribbles that got him past the player and into space and opened things up. They're kind of lucky at the moment if they're getting one a game from him. And Bielsa, when he starts, and there were none at all, no occurrences of that at all against QPR at the weekend. And Bielsa evidently spotted that without even having to go back and look at the statistics or to look at the post-match analysis that his own analysts would have done for him. So he's evidently looking for more from him, isn't he? And I have to say, rightly so, because the situation is set up at the moment, 5 points clear of third, for Saez to take this season by the scruff of the neck after Christmas. He's the sort of player who could really drive this on through, you know, the back end of the winter up towards Easter, and I do think that one way or the other, Bielsa is going to have to get him back to form to keep Leeds going like this.
Absolutely. I think it's clearly is just a gentle reminder for him, but it's different because, like, when he's had chances to do this with other players, he's kind of turned it down, hasn't he? Lewis Baker is a prime example. When he had that 45 minutes, he could have easily said similar comments, because we've not seen anywhere near enough from Lewis Baker since he's arrived at the club. But I think he just decided that he would protect him from that. Whereas with Saez,
does it make a difference that he's somebody else's player, do you think? Chelsea's player?
I don't think Bielsa would care about that. I don't know. I don't feel like Bielsa would be like, well, he's under my guidance at the moment.
I don't. But again, I agree with you. It was slightly odd the way in which he said it at half time of that game, the Reading game. I had no issue with Baker's performance and no issue with Alioski's performance, even though both of them had struggled to really contribute anything at all.
Yeah, and
particularly with Baker, first chance in such a long time.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, he could. I mean, you could, if you're going through the team by its position, you could say Cleek's dropped off a little bit on the basis that he's not producing as many goals. And I'm also convinced that he's never ever going to score for Leeds United again.
Now his song's appeared. Yeah.
But yeah, you could. I mean, you could easily go through. But maybe he's just decided that because Saez is someone that he really wants to sort of kick on, like you just say, that this is the way he wants to approach it, and he wants him to kick on. I mean, with his. I don't know if he rates Baker that much, or whether he just, I don't know what the situation is there without just from watching, because when you've seen Baker introduced in the past, he's brought Shackleton on in his place, which says to me he rates Shackleton higher than Baker in that position. So maybe it's just not in the nicest way possible to say this, but he might have given up on Baker.
Well, it's hard to draw any other conclusion.
It's brutal, isn't it? But that's because maybe that's why he's looking at the Saez situation and saying, we know he can improve, we want him to improve. Sorry, I'm just booting my microphone about.
Top quality equipment in here as we're dropping
to falling onto me. Anyway.
Yeah, you can't really. The observation you would take is that he turns to Baker so infrequently off the bench and even less so the starting lineup that it doesn't seem to be ticking boxes, that one. And likewise with Jack Harrison, really. I don't think that has worked out in any way, the way that Guardiola and Bielsa thought it would at the start of the season.
The weird thing with that as well is he just left him out of a matchday squad a few months ago. And nobody, we asked him, but he just didn't, he just went, yeah, he was fit. And he kind of just went under the radar, that, didn't it? And it was just a bit really weird, I don't know.
But then the bench does go like that, because there was no Tyler Roberts at the weekend again. Yeah. He seems to be in and out. It never seems to be a case of injury, it's just, you know, sometimes his face fits, sometimes it doesn't. I don't know whether that is dependent on the opposition and what specifically Bielsa thinks he's going to have to do with his bench. But then I wouldn't say his tactics from the bench are fairly formulaic. Obviously, there are times where he'll make substitutions in the first half, or when he'll make substitutions in, you know, half time when things aren't going particularly well. But generally, you feel as if you know which players he's going to turn to in any given situation. Different on Saturday because you got Matt Smith off the QPR bench, so suddenly you need Halme at the back. And one thing we haven't touched on was the fact that I certainly felt that Phillips had one of his poorest games on Saturday, without being terrible, but his error for the goal, him and Janssen involved in that mix-up, didn't look comfortable at centre-back, I didn't feel, on that particular day. He has done previously, but not against QPR, and I do think a better team or a more aggressive team might have taken advantage of him and that display. But yeah, Halme off the bench because you need to combat Matt Smith's height, but there is just that little... is the interchange of players, isn't there, amongst the substitutes. Sometimes Robertson's, sometimes he's not. Sometimes he wants Harrison there. Occasionally, like you said, he disappears from the bench. And they, I think, Baker and Harrison will be the big frustrations amongst the recruitment department. I think they'll have expected an awful lot more from them, and especially Harrison, particularly because there have been problems on the left-hand side, and that you would have thought would have opened the door to him, but he hasn't impressed enough.
No, and like I say, it's odd because Guardiola obviously took him on pre-season tour, and there was lots of promise of him coming here. So I think for him, like you say, with Alioski's struggles, he had a real chance to break into the team and make himself a standard winger in the Championship, getting picked week in, week out, and picking up more experience as he's come over from the MLS. But it's just not sort of worked out for him, has it, this season?
Smash.
This microphone.
On that note, transfers. We're almost certainly going to get an experienced keeper in. Bielsa was kind of bumming and eyeing about that when we asked last week, are you going to get a goalkeeper? He just said, I don't really want to say anything without knowing certain.
But that got blown out of proportion a little bit, didn't
it? Yeah,
some people took that as we're not he's playing coy to it all, but he basically just went, I don't want to comment because we don't definitely know what's happening. I think it's fairly obvious they're going to sign a goalkeeper.
Absolutely. I think it'll be in very quickly after the start of the window, all things being well. No to Tom Heaton, apparently, is what we're being told. Being linked with Kieran Westwood down at Sheffield Wednesday today. Again, I've asked about that one and being told, don't think so. Don't think that.
You would be able to sign him, though. But that's the kind of...
It's got to be somebody in that mould. I don't think it'll be David Stockdale either. That boat kind of sailed in the summer when Leeds and Birmingham failed to get a loan deal done. But there are options out there, and I would be extremely surprised if... I mean, it would look a bit negligent to me, really, if they didn't. That's a glaring hole in the squad. You can argue about the need for a centre-back, or you could kind of put forward some sort of rationale for signing another striker or you know, cover for Calvin Phillips. But in terms of a goalkeeper, you've got to have somebody else as a proper fixed alternative to Peacock Farrell. But in the case of other transfers, Bielsa was really saying last week that he doesn't expect to sign anybody, does he? And actually... seem to be saying he doesn't really want to sign anybody. He kind of said if we could get outstanding players who could fit into the team, no problem. Because in his words, he said a top player can fit into any side without needing much in the way of coaching, without needing much in the way of preparation. But he obviously feels that most of the players that Leeds would be able to sign would struggle on the basis that they haven't worked with them for months and months. And as we've said previously, he would prefer to just rely on the players who know the drill, who know what he does, who know how he plays. So yeah, it's looking like a quiet month. As I say, it's always a quiet month round here. The Leeds very rarely do big things in January, but it's quite rare for them to sort of telegraph at this stage that the likelihood is that they won't be doing anything.
Yeah, sounds like we'll get a keeper in the first week and then you can go on holiday for the rest of the month.
Excellent.
If you fancy it.
Excellent. If only there was a winter break. Yeah, bring it in. The other thing I'd say as well is a lot of people were suggesting that, you know, Bielsa was deliberately playing it coy so that he wasn't transmitting the fact that there was money to spend, but he never bluffs about anything, does he? He says what's in his head.
I think that is genuinely going to be their tact in January, unless something suddenly changes where they think they can get a deal done for the price that feels right. But I don't think anyone ever feels like they get good deals in January because everything's ballooned out of proportion, isn't it, with the ridiculous money in football now. So yeah, I don't think he was playing any tricks. I genuinely think that he believes that people that have been around for 6 months from the 23s, like we've seen with this injury crisis, that are just going to step up and fill the void, because they know how the system works and how we want them to play. So, like you say, unless you're spending 25 million on a new striker who's going to slot in and score you 15 goals to the end of the season, he's not going to have it, is he?
Well, they did say that the best players are going to be very expensive this month.
And which is true.
From speaking to various people, agents and others, it doesn't sound like there is a huge amount of money to be spent at Leeds at the moment. And I would be surprised if they were, even without Bielsa saying that, I think I'd have been surprised if they were going to be massively active or really spend to any great extent. But equally, in terms of outgoings, there is some MLS interest in Chybicki, who I'm told has not got any part in first team plans going forward. Louis Coyle, I think, be highly likely he'd go back to Fleetwood for the rest of the season if he's not going to be involved here. And very few other fringe members that I think Leeds would be in any way interested of letting go. Bielsa's pretty much made his squad, isn't he? He's pretty much used everybody who, you know, has been involved. I assume the likes of Harrison and Baker will stay for the second half of the season, and they are still involved in the sense of being on the bench, but not playing anywhere near as much as they'd like. And Baker said himself when he came in, you know, last season was a bit of a washout for him at Middlesbrough, and he's kind of down the same path again this season, but such is life, and that's the...
Well, he's getting into a similar situation as Coyle at Chelsea, isn't he, where he needs to go out and prove that he can do it every week at a certain level for him to get a career in the game. It's not happened for him so far. Maybe it'll happen somewhere else.
Would you say that Norwich and Leeds getting promoted under Bielsa and Daniel Farke, however that's pronounced, would be bad for English football?
Oh God, it'd be horrendous.
Wouldn't it just?
This what is an absolute ill-informed comment that this is. It's just trash radio.
Comment on TalkSport earlier this week, that on the basis that Bielsa is foreign, Farke is foreign, and that you have English coaches below them along the lines of Darren Moore at West Brom, you've got Chris Wilder at Sheffield United, you've got Frank Lampard at Derby County, you've got Dean Smith at Aston Villa, that there are others too, that it would be better for English football, and that, you know, that's the phrase being used. It's a pretty ambiguous catch-all phrase that doesn't really mean anything. It would be better for English football if it was English coaches for English football clubs. There's a Brexit slogan.
Just talking bollocks, isn't he?
Yes.
He's literally just thought about that 5 minutes before he's gone on air or something, hasn't he? And just gone, I'm going to say this just to be controversial. I think you made you did a few points on Twitter last night, and I've seen all the fallout, and I just got to the stage where I was like, I can't even be arsed getting involved because it's just such a stupid comment. And fine if he genuinely thinks that, but he works for a radio station that try and create controversy and around it, so whatever.
The few thoughts that stood out were the fact that we've been approached for interviews about Bielsa and Leeds from France, Germany, Chile, Argentina, Spain. I've had somebody from Portugal. I've had two from Scandinavia, both from Norway. I think others in England, people in Scotland, Ireland, other journalists, and Mexico as well, right back at the start. So there probably is nobody outside of the Premier League who is doing more to promote the English game unintentionally. It's not Bielsa's Bielsa's intention that everybody comes and writes about, I don't think, but nobody is doing more to promote the English game across the world, Europe and other parts of the world, than him in terms of championship.
You've got
coaches.
People watching the championship in South America who would never have watched the championship a year ago.
Absolutely. But also, the academy is getting used probably more under Bielsa than any other coach, and perhaps going back to
Farke's promoted kids absolutely from the youth. It's just an ill-informed and no research done into that comment. It's just, I can't even be asked to get annoyed about it.
Well, the real point that stood out to me though is, how good is Darren Moore's squad at West Brom? I think it's the best in the division.
That and Villa. Obviously Villa have sold a few or got rid of a few that have on loan, and from what we've seen, obviously we haven't seen Villa in the flesh yet, but West Brom are the best team physically and played the best football that we saw in terms of an individual game from against Leeds. They were the best team in the division that we've seen so far.
But Lampard's got a healthy budget at Derby. I know that Leeds realised that they were out of the running for Harry Wilson, and they realised how much Derby were paying for him. There are seriously players at West Brom who would not even come close to fitting into the wage bill at Leeds. So does not seem like a good thing for coaches who can't get those clubs promoted to
bad
to
for the English
the
game
league.
I don't, like, if you look at the squad Leeds had this time last year, how many changes are there less than five in the like in terms of like what who's playing every week.
The Leeds United starting lineup.
So
yeah,
if anything, it's a lesson to English coaches that if you actually coach players properly and stick to your training methods, etc., do everything right, that you can get more out of teams that are shit, basically.
It's the polar opposite, isn't it? Of what's going on at Manchester United, which is we don't have enough this from the head coach.
Well,
we can't spend enough. Yeah. We need to sign more players. The players here we've got aren't good enough. And what you're seeing at Leeds with Bielsa is pure coaching. It's a case of I'm going to make these players good enough and I'm going to create a situation where if Ayling's injured, Berardi's injured, Janssen's injured, if the entire back four are missing, I'll have academy players who can come and play and we'll win games regardless. And I do think there's a good coaching lesson there for people. And more to the point, when you've got Guardiola and Pochettino saying, we've taken inspiration from this guy, this guy's influenced their careers, then it's an open goal for everybody else to have a look, isn't it? Everybody else to have a look. So, yes, shall we file that in the bollocks category?
Yeah, and I also like to just say, Bielsa as well, any other coach that I've ever known would be crying from the rooftops as it stands about this injury crisis, saying,
absolutely,
I need 30 players in January, this is unacceptable, I've had to use the 23s, what I'm doing is amazing, I'm second in the championship in December having had 21 injuries or whatever, individual injuries, whatever it is, to whether it's the same players or not. And it's just a joke that he's even said that on.
Also, just to be fair to Norwich as well, 12 wins from 15 games
brilliant.
They've got.
Absolutely fantastic.
12 wins
yeah.
from 15 games.
I mean, the amount of late goals they've scored as well is ridiculous.
It is, but the form speaks for itself.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah.
That's the benchmark.
I think the biggest point you made on Twitter was Bielsa and Farker have come over here. If you want to beat them, beat them. Beat them on the pitch. You can't just say because they're foreign, you can't manage it. Oh, whatever. I wasn't getting annoyed. I'm getting annoyed.
I'm sucking you into this, aren't I? Yeah. No, it's a totally different argument, isn't it, to you need more English players in the Premier League. That I understand there's a situation where you've got a national team who want quality players, and the more English players you have at a higher level, the better they're going to be, and, you know, as a result, the better, in theory, the national team is going to be. Given that the national coach at the moment, the one who's taking them to World Cup semi-final, Nations League semi-final, big tournament, obviously, it is a manager who did not cope brilliantly in the Premier League when he was at Middlesbrough, the argument just doesn't stack up, does it?
No, but you look at the football that Southgate's got England playing now, and it's brilliant. And can you imagine where English football would be with Sam Allardyce still in charge of it at this point if it hadn't have all kicked off with him? Like, it would be light years behind. So they've got a coach there who's willing to adapt. He's said himself he's gone away to learn about different styles of football, and he's trying to get the best out of a quality young group that are coming through at England. It's just rubbish, isn't it, what he said? It's just absolute rubbish.
Speaking of quality English managers, Phil Parkinson and Bolton Wanderers this weekend.
Is he still going to be there?
Well, a lot of problems over there.
Players. Big strong links with Reading, isn't it?
Yeah. One of the journalists who was at the game on Saturday said that he thought that by the end of this week or potentially by the end of the month that Parkinson would be gone and down at Reading. I can't say anything to confirm or deny that either way. I have no idea. But big problems over at Bolton. The players are due money time I read, they haven't been paid. They're second from bottom in the league. They are without Sammy Amiobi this weekend. They are not scoring a great deal of goals. They look in serious, serious trouble.
They've got a chairman writing letters to local journalists.
It brought back happy memories of Ken Bates' programme. Where I used to open them every Saturday, see my name and think, oh, good, here we go.
Phil, hey, what have you done this week? I have to admit, I chuckled at that. It was brilliant. If you haven't read it, you should go and read it. It's Ken Anderson's column to Mark, the local journalist at
He's a very good guy, Mark.
He's a top bloke,
and without wanting to seem like we're backing our own, he's a good reporter, he's a good journalist, and I suspect that a lot of his coverage has been absolutely bang on the money.
Well, I think my favourite part was when he said his player ratings had a negative effect on the squad when, like, a day earlier, he hadn't paid his players. That's probably more likely to have a negative effect, pal. Anyway, sorry.
But that seems to come under the bracket of QPR, Bristol City, Reading, games that if you're finishing top two, you should really be going and winning.
Yes,
I think Leeds will.
It sounds like they gave a very good account themselves at Norwich last week as well. But like you say, in very difficult circumstances, and you don't know what sort of the home atmosphere is going to be like next week around the club, because obviously lots of off-field issues that we could spend hours talking about. So I think it's, again, we always say this, and it's a cliche, but if you want to be at the right end of the Championship, those are the away games you've got to target getting 3 points from.
Player ratings are funny, actually. I mean, obviously mine are always wrong, it goes without saying.
And no one can see them.
Nobody, I don't know whether the players take as much interest now, because nobody really mentions it much, but back in the day, players never moaned about anything so much as player ratings. I can remember somebody moaning about getting an 8 out of 10 because they thought they'd been better than that.
Have you ever handed out a 10 out of 10, just out of interest?
Once to Ross McCormack, after he scored 4 away at Cheltenham, 4 very, very good goals. Okay, that's the only time.
I think
previously, Rio Ferdinand, after the win at home to Deportivo in the Champions League, Nigel Martin away at Roma, I think, are the only players in the entire history of the Evening Post who've had 10 out of 10.
Anyone ever got a 0?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll give you the best example. And I remember him taking the hump about this. Norwich away let me get this right, 2010, I think. 90th minute, Leeds are 1-0 down. Simon Grayson sends on Trezor Candle, injury time, because Leeds have a free kick, at which they're basically in a hoof into the box. Ball goes up, referee blows for a foul. Candle turns round and slaps the player who was marking him and gets a red card. So it's on the pitch for probably 75 seconds, 80 seconds, sent off. So that was it. That was a right royal, 0 out of 10.
That's a minus one, that.
He seemed mystified by that. And I agree with you. It was almost the case of, you could get into minus figures on this one. But yeah, it has been done. I can't remember exactly what Rehubka got on the night of that debacle against Blackpool, but that was knocking on the door.
He got straight in a car and never returned to Leeds United.
I know. Somebody said flew to his home planet. Bless him. I suspect that the problem at Bolton is probably not the Bolton news, his player ratings. I'll say that now.
There was a QPR midfielder who came on, got booked within about 10 seconds, wasn't there, on Saturday half time?
It was Scowen, wasn't it? Yeah, he'd been
Around to you and went, he's just come on,
21 seconds, after he failed. That isn't really grounds for his...
No, it's not, but it's just... You just see players trying to make an impact, just booting someone up in the air or slapping someone.
Particularly harsh. I do, from time to time, people seem to think that I'm Craig Revel Hallwood, which is probably fair enough. But ups and downs. And as I say, if the worst that's going on at Bolton is that they're getting 3 out of 10 every now and again, having won it can't be bad.
I think he actually had a look and went through back, because I think Bolton got beat 7-1 at Reading last year. And I think even then, his point was, I don't even think I handed out a 2.
God, that's generous.
But that's what I mean. But I think his point was, like, his player ratings aren't even, like, intentionally that bad anyway. But
when Leeds got humped down at Sheffield Wednesday 6-0, Matt Smith got a 0 that day because he came on, elbowed Antonio, was it, in the head? Red card after 60 seconds, gone in 60 seconds. That was a 0.
Was that Matt Smith?
It was Matt Smith,
Did Jason Pearce get sent off in that game as well?
Not to the best of my knowledge.
Did he elbow someone? I can't remember. My memory's...
Very few players actually seem to be on the pitch, but that's just...
That was a Zalukas afternoon.
But there were ones and twos.
He's a Hearts legend.
He is a Hearts legend. So
I blame you for that.
So I know I shouldn't say this, but I forgive him that.
He was really good at Hearts.
He was Scottish Cup winning captain.
I know, and then he came to Leeds. He was actually not bad, and then that afternoon sort of ruined his career.
Never let it be said that Scottish football is a standard below the higher levels in England. A win at Bolton would set Bielsa and the players up for what is by far the most difficult game of the month, and actually, even though we're taking a hiding away at West Brom, could be one of the hardest games of the season, which is away at Villa on the 23rd of December. That's shaping up to be a real cracker.
It's going
to
be class. It's going to be... It's almost parallels with the Warrington-Frampton fight, isn't it, on the night before. It's going to be properly blow-to-blow. I think the way Villa play as well, they don't seem to care about defending at the moment, which hopefully plays into Leeds' hands a little bit. If Leeds can get themselves defensively organised, I don't see why they can't go and get a result there, given that I think they've shipped some crazy amount of goals recently. That Forest game was nuts, wasn't it? It was a 5-0. Was it Forest?
Yeah, it was 5-0.
And obviously the second City derby before that as well, conceded a couple of goals to Birmingham. So I think they're there. I think they're there to be got at. And like you say, it's going to be a cracker. I think they're coming into form at the right time, though.
Yeah, definitely.
They're one to watch, aren't they? Especially with the fact that no one's really got away in the Championship apart until now, where it's a 5-point gap.
I think, like, unlike Stoke, they seem to have got it together.
And obviously, change the manager at the right time, you're probably saying. Dean Smith, who's a villain. So.
Well, yeah, he's a villain, and he's a bit of a villain round here, but he is actually a very good coach, and I have to say, I always liked the way that Brentford played under him. But
should we mention the hand of J-Rod?
No.
No, just because he saw that but didn't see the dive. Yeah, I think that was the issue that everyone talked.
We've done a lot of referees recently, haven't we? So we'll give
it was
them
a great finish. We'll give them the week off.
And also, we're all writing Christmas cards to Peter Banks this week, aren't we? Thanks for that penalty. He'll go down in the history books.
He refereed earlier, didn't he? Was it the Birmingham defeat?
The Birmingham game. Yeah,
I think everyone was complaining about him for that as well.
Yeah,
but was it a penalty on Saturday?
Carried out.
We keep getting sidetracked. We're supposed to be talking about Villa.
Yeah, sorry. Carried out of Ellen Road on everybody's shoulders on Saturday, wasn't he? I haven't seen a good replay of it. I honestly don't know. Keep having adamant that it wasn't. But
His tweet said as much.
Yes. Yeah.
See if he gets charged for that.
Surely you would have thought.
Probably not.
Said that about Charlie Austin and Sergio Canos. That's all from us for this week. Joe's off to watch the 23s away at Burnley. Hopefully a bit of Izzy Brown action and possibly Patrick Bamford involved as well, which would be good. We didn't mention that Bamford was back on the bench on Saturday, but obviously a big step forward for him as well. But we'll be back next week previewing the Villa game. We might have a little chat about Warrington Frampton too, if you can indulge us on that, because I'll be over covering that on the Saturday night before hot footing it down to Birmingham. But in the meantime, have a good week. Enjoy Bolton at the weekend, and we'll see you soon. Thanks for listening.